On this week's post-free agent edition of the Adam Schefter podcast, we'll take a look back at the week that was in free agency with our great NFL reporter Field Yates reviewing a bevy of moves that were made, figuring out what was right, what was wrong, and what the future holds for some of these big, high-priced moves. We'll also sit down and talk with the Jets' new cornerback, Trumaine Johnson, who signed a huge deal with the Jets last week to be their number one cornerback. But first, Field Yates. All right, Field, so we are now 1 week after free agency, thankfully, I guess. And I would ask you, what stood out to you most about week one?
You know, Adam, this is the second straight year that we've seen a trend that I think is going to persist. And, you know, there was a time where if you were talking to parents of future football players, you might say, raise your son to be a quarterback or raise your son to be a wide receiver. Now I might look a parent of a football player in the eye and say, I hope he is capable to play along the offensive line. Because offensive linemen were once again paid in a massive, massive way with Nate Solder and Andrew Norwell leading the way at $15.5 million per season for Solder and $13.5 million for Andrew Norwell. I don't know that either of them would be the very best player at his respective position if you were just measuring them relative to all 32 starters there. Yep. But they are now the most handsomely paid, and that tells you a lot about the way the NFL is headed.
Well, think about this. Nate Solder, now the highest paid offensive tackle. Ryan Jensen, now the highest paid center. Andrew Norwell, now the highest paid guard. It's incredible to think that these offensive linemen came in the way they did. I think it speaks to the shortage of offensive linemen around the league, and also why somebody should be taking Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame earlier rather than later in the draft, why he should be a top five or so pick, because there just aren't enough offensive linemen to develop. All right, Phil, let's go to the quarterbacks for a second. Again, I'm going to be very broad and vague on a lot of these questions because I'm curious to see where you go with them. But what was your biggest takeaway about quarterbacks in free agency?
I think that, first of all, it's still good to be a quarterback, right? I mean, Sam Bradford, for example, played two games last season, just two for the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, he got hurt in the second one. And Adam, I'd be curious if you've heard the same thing, but I know for a long time, because Sam's been in the league since 2010, I've had personnel men and coaches tell me he might be one of, if not the most difficult, he might be one of the most difficult evaluations they've ever done. And the reason is this: if you saw Sam Bradford healthy in a practice, you would say, my goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that guy from Oklahoma. But, as we know, as Bill Polian often reminds us, availability is the greatest ability. And Sam Bradford, I've been doing some research since I saw the fine print of it. I believe Sam Bradford now has the league's largest per-game roster bonus in 2018. Because for every game he's on the 46-man roster, he'll earn $312,000. Wow. Like, that's an incredible amount, up to $5 million. The Cardinals protected themselves, but it's still good to be a quarterback, even an off-injured one.
And they had to protect themselves. And I think what was interesting about this is when Sam Bradford was making his free agent decision, the two teams that were most interested in his services were the Arizona Cardinals and the Buffalo Bills. And when he is making his decision, one of the factors that enters into this, and I think this is more true for Sam Bradford than almost any other player, but the idea of playing in the cold in Buffalo on field turf compared to what it would be like playing in the heat in the desert in Arizona was more appealing to him to go do that. And so I think the weather, the climate, the conditions played a factor into Sam Bradford, who's been battered throughout the course of his career, and where he wound up. And you bring up those roster bonuses, and you bring up his talent. When you talk to personnel people about Sam Bradford, you're exactly right. They allude to that arm strength, the accuracy, his ability. Look, there's a reason that Philadelphia was able to turn Sam Bradford into a first and fourth round draft pick from Minnesota because of his talent. And it's evident there, and that's what Arizona right now is betting on. All right, the other thing that was interesting to me, Field, is we've seen a lot of players start to leave New England. The aforementioned Nate Solder, Deion Lewis, Danny Amendola. A lot of players leaving New England, and not just them. What do you make of that?
You know, this was an interesting offseason for the Patriots, Adam. You know the Patriots are always going to draw their line in the sand when it comes to a player. They're going to have their valuation set in stone prior to free agency, and it's very rare for them to extend beyond that intended number. So I look at these in aggregate, but also I have to kind of compartmentalize and look at them individually. And I just don't think the Patriots were comfortable with the idea of making Nate Solder the highest paid offensive lineman in league history on an average annual basis. Danny Amendola was clutch in so many ways, but if they had matched Miami's offer to Danny Amendola, then over the next 2 years, Amendola would have made more money than Julian Edelman, which I think for them, again, you're thinking to yourself, can we possibly justify that? And then for Deion Lewis is a player the Patriots signed as a reserve future contract player. No guaranteed money. Now the Patriots have an opportunity to find their next Deion Lewis, whether it's through the draft, or perhaps they feel as though Jeremy Hill, who got $150,000 guaranteed from them, could become sort of a LeGarrette Blount light, because people may not realize this. I believe since entering the league, Jeremy Hill is somewhere in the top like 3 to 5 of rushing touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he has 0 rushing touchdowns last season. So he is a powerful, talented, albeit inconsistent back that the Patriots that they can get some consistency out of.
Well, along those lines, one of the teams that added a couple of former Patriots was the Tennessee Titans. And so we're going to take a listen, Field, to some voicemails that were left for us from some callers.
Hey, Adam, this is Derek from Ohio. I was just wondering, big Titans fan, with the addition of Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler, what do you think Deion Lewis's role will be in our offense with Derrick Henry? And what do you think of our secondary?
Well, Derek, I would tell you this, that Deion Lewis, I would think, would serve a role much like he did in New England. They've got Derrick Henry there in Tennessee. I think they want to feature him. But Deion Lewis is going to be effective catching the ball out of the backfield for Marcus Mariota. He's going to complement Derrick Henry. He brings them that threat that I think they were looking for last year. A little bit of elusiveness, a little bit of versatility. They'll be able to mix and match. And by the way, if Deion Lewis gets hot, there's no problem riding him. There are very few backs that average more yards per carry after contact than Deion Lewis, because you wouldn't think that with his stature, but that guy was a machine. He's tough. He plays much bigger than he actually is, and I think it'll be a biggest addition for the Tennessee Titans. As for the secondary, you look at it, Malcolm Butler. Look, what's interesting here, Field, to me, is that the Titans have a Patriots flavor to them. Mike Vrabel is the head coach. He's played in New England. He understands what goes on there. John Robinson, the Titans GM, worked in the Patriots front office. He knows how it works there. So there's no way that they don't speak, I don't believe, to the Patriots without making that move. They got assurances or got some sort of insight from the Patriots about these guys. And so they signed Malcolm Butler, who they pair opposite, by the way, another former Patriot, Logan Ryan, and Jonathan Cyprien, who they got as a free agent from Jacksonville, and Kevin Byard, who they stole in the draft last year and played at a Pro Bowl level. So Tennessee has really built up that secondary in large part thanks to New England, with both cornerbacks being former Patriots.
Yeah, it's a very interesting move that if Malcolm Butler wasn't going to get paid in New England, then he was going to get paid by somebody who has such New England ties. Like you noted, Adam, the one thing that I would, this is just surmising, this is not something I know as a fact, but in New England, hear me out here, I don't know that they have time to waste time. As in, if you don't know that Malcolm Butler is that player that you can invest $60 million in, or $50 million in, because he wasn't that player on the field last year. He was a good player. He wasn't a great player for them. Where in Tennessee, you can bank on the performance and the potential going forward because your trajectory and your timeline isn't the same in New England. The reality for the Patriots is they've got a lot of good players on the roster that every time you make a major investment in a player, it might mean that somebody else isn't sticking around. So if you give a bunch of money to Malcolm Butler or Deion Lewis, it might cost you another key cog on your roster either this year in free agency or in future years in free agency. And I think they probably said, and they didn't know at the time, but I think they probably will say, for what amounts to 1/20th of the cost. Now, obviously, Malcolm Butler's contract is for 5 years. They're getting Jason McCourty for next year, who last year on the field, they probably would have graded as a higher-rated cornerback than what Malcolm Butler was for them, and all they had to do was switch draft picks with the Cleveland Browns. So it was a sort of conventional Bill Belichick move, finding value where others maybe didn't see it.
Well, one of the other questions we got from Callersfield was regarding the Miami Dolphins.
Hey, what's up, Shefty? This is Joel. I just want to know, my man, what is going on with the Dolphins? We make these crazy moves. We get rid of all these big names. We call it a culture change. But I saw it before. I've been a fan for 23 years, my entire life. What is going on?
Well, Joel, I will say this to you. Having spoken to some people in that organization over the weekend on the coaching staff, I can tell you that they think that they're making moves in the right direction. I know you don't think that. I know it doesn't look like that. I know that when you move on from players like Jarvis Landry and Ndamukong Suh, arguably their best offensive and defensive players, certainly their biggest name offensive and defensive players, that it doesn't reflect well. And we'll find out. I can tell you this. They absolutely think they have a plan. They absolutely think they're doing the right thing. They are convinced that these moves are going to work out and the team is going to be better for it. And we'll find out whether they're right. I can tell you the conviction in the voices of the people I spoke to was unwavering. Now, many times, I'll go back to this one example. There was a time back in the mid-1990s when I was covering the Broncos. And the Broncos, at that point in time, cut or traded Anthony Miller, who was a big, high-priced wide receiver, and Mike Pritchard, who they traded multiple high draft picks for. And nobody in Colorado could understand why the Broncos were moving on from Anthony Miller, this great receiver, and Mike Pritchard. And then they brought in this undrafted free agent named Rod Smith, and they brought in this backup wide receiver from San Francisco named Ed McCaffrey, and Smith and McCaffrey became two of the best wide receivers in Broncos history. I'm not telling you that this is going to happen in Miami, but I'm going to tell you right now that they believe that they've got the right answers. And as one person said to me, all the people down here don't understand what we're doing, and I'm not going to explain what we're doing, but watch what we're doing. So we'll find out whether or not they're right. I'm just telling you their side of the story, their version. They believe they are on the right path and making the right moves. What do you think, Field?
You know, Adam, when I got into the media, I did not leave the scouting world and immediately immerse myself into the football media. There was a bridge where I got my real estate license. That's a whole separate story for another podcast. But when I decided to try my hand at the media and with the fortune of having people like yourself and others as great mentors for me, one thing that I realized was that I remember being on the inside and being a part of decisions that publicly might have been met with some hesitation or some confusion. And so, but internally, they made all the sense in the world because of factors that people who are working inside teams are aware of that will either never be made public or will only be made public at some point down the line. So that's a long way of saying that when I see teams make moves in the NFL, whether it's a trade, free agent signing, a draft pick, etc., my initial instinct is to always try to understand where they are coming from as opposed to assuming that there is something wrong with it. Because I will say this, I have been probably confused by Miami's overall moves this offseason, but I understand there's a lot more to it. I think on paper, from a talent standpoint, they are decidedly worse. I do believe in the value of culture in football. I also feel like it's a rhetoric or a refrain that we've heard a couple of different times from Miami over the past few off seasons. So I feel like if they've made progress in that regard, it's been baby steps. And this league is not one that is chock full of patience. So I think Miami Dolphins fans are probably pretty fairly, I don't say fed up, but they're probably fairly confused right now based off of what's happened this offseason. I mean, so much talent out the door, and I'm just not so sure how much they've added.
All right, staying in the AFC East field, we had a big trade over the weekend. And it came down Saturday morning, and what I found unusual about this is it was very early for a trade of that magnitude to get done. Now, I go back to the Super Bowl week. That also was early for a trade of the magnitude of Alex Smith to get done. But the Redskins recognized that there was a quarterback in January that they didn't want to wait on. and they wanted to make a move on right away. And I think the Jets had a similar idea and approach in this particular deal. You don't often see draft picks being traded on March 17th, which is what happened this particular weekend. I thought it was interesting that they moved all the way up to 3. Obviously, they're going up for a quarterback. You don't trade up for any other position. So now the question becomes, which quarterback are they going to be in the market for? What was your take on the big move over the weekend?
The bottom line is the Jets are comfortable with 3 quarterbacks, at least. They have to be, because there is just no way, even if you think you've got every angle of the Cleveland and New York Giants draft outlook polished or understood. But they have to be. The Jets have to be comfortable with at least 3 of the what I call core 4 quarterbacks, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and Baker Mayfield. Because if you move up to 3, and let's just say they happen to love Sam Darnold the most, and he's not there, well, mm-hmm. You better have, as the Jets said during free agency, we have a plan A, plan B, plan C. Well, they better have plan A, plan B, plan C in the draft, and I'm sure they do. It was an aggressive move. I thought it was a large price to pay, but when you look back on quarterback acquisitions, and I think the Eagles are a good example of this, there is no price too expensive to pay in the NFL to acquire a franchise quarterback. But I think the Jets must feel completely comfortable with at least 3 of those 4 top quarterback prospects. And I'm sure they have, their wish. I'm sure they have their 1A, 1B, 1C. I'm just surprised, though, that they didn't have – I'm surprised with you, Adam, how quickly it happened and that maybe the move wasn't all the way up to pick 2 with the New York Giants.
All right, Phil, we've got another voicemail regarding the San Francisco 49ers and their big signing.
Adam, big fan. My name's Adam as well, out of Houston. So my question is, with the signing of Jerick McKinnon, in your opinion, covering – football and all sports that you have for this period of time and knowing the in-depth of that position, do you think that he will be able to hold up for a whole season as a featured back?
Well, Adam, what I would tell you is this, and I hate to even admit this while Field is on the podcast and while Field will be doing fantasy podcasts throughout the course of the summer, but a team does not spend $7.5 million per year on a running back if it doesn't have great confidence in him. And not only that, but I don't think that they view him as an every down, full down back. I think they view him as an every down weapon. Think of the way that the Seahawks once used Percy Harvin of the Vikings when he was very productive. Think of the way that other teams use certain weapons like that. Kyle Shanahan is a very creative offensive mind. And Kyle Shanahan was the guy who wanted Jerick McKinnon here. The Jets wanted him. The Buccaneers wanted him. But the 49ers were willing to pay the most to get him. And when you see a team step out there and be as aggressive as the 49ers were and go over a certain price that most people are expecting, and Jerick McKinnon was the highest paid running back in all of free agency with the exception of Le'Veon Bell on the franchise tag, that tells you that the 49ers have big plans for the guy, that they really like the guy. Now, again, maybe it isn't every down back. The only thing I would say there is, they really like Matt Breida an awful lot as well. So somehow, some way, you figure out how it works. Between McKinnon and Breida, I think those guys get a ton of work in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'll jump in here and say this is maybe not in the same way that other players I'll mention do, but I think the thing about Jerick McKinnon that's unique, and I think will be especially unique in Kyle Shanahan's offense, is that he's a player that a defense has to account for on every single snap. He won't simply be lined up in the backfield, whether it's with Jimmy Garoppolo under center or Jimmy Garoppolo in shotgun and Jerick McKinnon riding side carriage to him. He will probably be lined up as a receiver in the slot on occasion. Mm-hmm. And not that he is of the same ilk as a Julio Jones or a Gronk, but those are the kind of players that, like, even if they aren't the primary focal point of the offensive play, a defense is going to pay them attention every single snap. And I think that McKinnon's versatility, highlighted in the Kyle Shanahan offense, will make him a player that when defensive coordinators begin their game plan process each week, it might start with whatever number Jerick McKinnon wears for San Francisco, whether it's 21 or otherwise. Mm-hmm. He's a unique talent, and now they've got two talented running backs out of the same college, small college, Georgia Southern, with him and Matt Breida, who was an undrafted free agent from Georgia Southern this past year.
That's an interesting little factor. I didn't realize that field. That's very good. That's your scouting roots right there, right?
There you go. That's right. You know, there's always a connection with these NFL teams.
Both backs, McKinnon and Breida, went to Georgia Southern?
Georgia Southern. How about that? I'd imagine they have, you know, several records at Georgia Southern, too.
Wow. Now, if I were a 49ers beat writer, I would be at Georgia Southern this spring doing a major feature on the place that produced the two 49ers running backs.
Say, I'm with you there. Now, so which one of them jumps on that first? Perhaps we could send our own Nick Wagoner out there who covers the 49ers for ESPN.com.
That's going to have to get done. That's very interesting. I didn't realize that both backs went to Georgia's. Why didn't you tweet that already?
I guess I'm behind the eight ball, Shefty. I've been too busy following your tweets about guys signing and visiting and signing new deals, well, getting traded.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I hadn't realized that. All right, we have one more voicemail, field that is also of note, with a team that you once worked for, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Hey, Adam, this is Hunter Jones. I'm here from Missouri. I was calling to talk to you about the Sammy Watkins deal. Do you think the Chiefs overpaid for him? Because I'm seeing a lot of receivers getting signed in the free agency and stuff like Mike Evans, I think, was only getting a little bit less than $16 million a year. So now that the Chiefs paid so much for Sammy Watkins, is it worth it, and did we overpay for him?
Well, I will always say this to you, that a player is worth whatever a team is willing to pay him. And so did the Chiefs overpay him? I guess not, because other teams wanted him, and the Rams wanted him back and went to a certain number that wasn't terribly far off from that area. But I will say this, the number was surprising. I think that few people expected Sammy Watkins to be getting $16 million a year on the open market when he struggled to stay healthy. I think that his agents did a heck of a job. Torrey Dandy was right on that one right there. And the Chiefs really wanted this guy. We'll find out whether or not he's worth it. What was interesting to me was when we were doing NFL Live on the day that he signed and the numbers came out, Bill Polian, the Hall of Fame general manager who used to work in Indianapolis, was incensed and mortified by the deal. He thought that the Chiefs way overpaid. So I will say this, that if Bill Polian thinks that the Chiefs way overpaid, that's an early discouraging sign for what the Chiefs gave up to get him.
Yeah, it was a lot of money, and they targeted two players very precisely in free agency, Sammy Watkins and also Anthony Hitchens, who is a linebacker that came over from the Dallas Cowboys. Now, they feel as though they added like a glass-eating toughness to their defense by signing Anthony Hitchens, even if the number felt more robust than people would expect. I think it was around $9 million per season for him. With Watkins, I think the Chiefs felt as though they've got a quarterback who we're soon going to be talking about Patrick Mahomes' arm strength in the same vein that we often talk about Joe Flacco's arm strength. And I think there's a chance that the Chiefs are sort of chemically imbalanced this year, as in, like, defensively, they aren't going to win a lot of games because they hold you to 14 points.
Shootouts. AFC West-style shootouts.
That's right. So, and Patrick Mahomes is familiar with that because that's what he did in college when he played at Texas Tech. So I think the Chiefs might have a very Texas Tech North feel to them. Sammy Watkins, again, I think what's important to remind people is, just like we were talking about with Jerick McKinnon, you're not just paying for what he does when the football is in his hands. You're paying for what he does when the football is not in his hands. Sammy Watkins is the kind of guy that has that speed that, like, it's going to be pick your poison. If Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill are consistently getting vertical for the Chiefs, it's going to be, you know, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 yards for Travis Kelce between the hashes. I think the Chiefs has a lot of interesting elements, and I know you've tweeted and said this, Adam. That might be the most talented skill group in the NFL now.
Well, listen, but Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt. Give me a foursome in the NFL that you think is more potent or dangerous. I guess you go Le'Veon Bell. Antonio Brown, who's 3 and 4 there?
Juju Smith-Schuster. Juju Smith-Schuster, it's...
I think Pittsburgh would compare.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think of another one. You got one?
That would compare? Off the top of my head, I would just say that remember at the top level talents, but the Rams got so much out of their skill guys last year, and Todd Gurley was just so brilliant. Hard to look past them. You might make a case for the Saints if you could put together a quadrant there, and then the Patriots, certainly, depending on who you view as the top running back there, Gronk plus Edelman plus Cooks. There's certainly a lot of talent and firepower there as well. But it's and the Vikings, but these guys are all really good. Let's put it that way for the Chiefs. And it may not be that they win games, you know, 19-14, but they may win some games 39-34. So they would be a team that, if I were just a neutral NFL observer that could only subscribe to one team to watch next year, they might be a team that I would say, I want to watch the Chiefs every single Sunday.
Now, I don't disagree with that. And by the way, I think we'll see a lot of that with the Oakland Raiders. We've seen that in years past. The Chargers have been in some shootouts. So the defense has a lot of talent in L.A. And the Broncos, the defense is not quite what it was, and the offense should be more explosive. So, again, I go back to the AFC West in one of these AFL kind of days where the AFL used to have shootouts. And who knows? We may get more of that next season in the AFC West. Phil, I want to thank you for joining us. You did a great job in free agency. I guess we could rest up and get ready for draft night now in late April.
Say, what do we have, a month and like a week? I'm ready, Shefty. So ready.
Field, I also want to remind listeners that they can call in and leave their questions in the future at 860-506-5779. That's 860-506-5779. Field, great job.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Field. Appreciate it, my friend.
See you, buddy.
Tremaine, congratulations on the new deal. Really appreciate taking some time. How does it feel to have this new deal and have this all behind you?
Man, it feels great. It really does. You know, just want to thank the Jets organization for believing in me, and I can't wait to get started.
A lot of people, Tremaine, talked about Kirk Cousins playing on a franchise tag for two straight years. Nobody talked about Tremaine Johnson playing on a franchise tag for two straight years. What was that experience like for you?
You know, me and Joe, we had a plan each year. You know, the ultimate goal is to reach a long-term deal with an organization. But just for the last, 2 years, I kind of just bet on myself, you know, and it worked out in the long run, you know, with the two franchise tags and then just getting this blessed deal from the New York Jets.
And for those who don't know, it's a five-year $72.5 million contract, $34 million guaranteed, and the Joel that you talk about is your agent, Joel Siegel, who helped you procure that deal. And again, Tremaine, as I said, why did more people not talk about you betting on yourself, like you said you did, when people talked regularly about Kirk Cousins betting on himself in Washington?
Oh, man, I come from a small school, University of Montana. You know, I got selected in the third round, pick 65, to the St. Louis Rams. We had some rough years there. You know, we finally turned it around, last year, my 6 year being on the Rams. I've been underrated, man. I've been underrated with these, with everything, sports analysts. And, I haven't made it to the Pro Bowls yet. But I always believed in myself, man. With God, I know I could do anything.
How much attention did you pay to Kirk Cousins and the way that he handled his situation with Washington, being that you were in the same situation, yet nobody talked about it quite as much?
To be honest, I know he was going through the same situation, but I have a great agent, within Joe Siegel that helped me, and I learned from him, daily about the whole situation. And like I said, man, when it came down to it, I kind of just bet on myself for the last, 2 years. And just figured I'd just go out there and play, and up my game each year. And, it worked out in the end.
Tremaine, what did you learn about the process during the 2 years? You said you took some lessons from Joel.
Stay humble, man. Stay consistent. And, and play your game. I've been playing football, since I was 6 years old.
Yep.
So go out there, man, and don't worry about nothing, man, and then to take care of itself.
So aside from the money's obvious, and we all know what the money means, but why the New York Jets?
The New York Jets, man, they have, for the most part, they have a great organization over there. And why not try to go over there and turn around the organization? You know, they haven't had a winning season in a long time. My former coach that was coaching me at, in St. Louis and also in Los Angeles, Denard Wilson, he's there too. So, man, he's very passionate about his work, and, he brings the best out of his players.
How much do you know about the rest of the organization and its personnel, Tremaine?
Its personnel? Well, I just met a lot of people up yesterday, actually. I just got out there yesterday. I went through the whole building, met with the head coach all the way to the security people. Man, I can't wait to get started, man. I really can't.
What stood out about your first experience at Jets headquarters, meeting some of those people?
they're really serious, man. They serious about their media, and they're, you know, it's a good fan base, man. Matter of fact, it's a great fan base. You know, Jets up there, man. They're looking to win. You know, it's a straightforward, and that's my goal, man. To go out there and win some games, man, and go, hopefully go to the playoffs.
Tremaine, you're born in Stockton. You went to college in Montana. You started your career in St. Louis. You moved to Los Angeles. Have you ever lived on the East Coast?
I never lived on the East Coast. like you said, I'm from Stockton. Went to Montana to St. Louis, and then St. Louis to, you know, to California. And I'm excited to live in New York, man. You know, New Jersey, the Big Apple, ain't no better place. So, you know, show your skill set and make a name for yourself out there.
As you were touring the building, did you say that they were serious about the media? Is that what I heard you say?
The media could be serious out there for sure in New York. It really can. But like I said, I'm there to play football. I mean, I'm not really worried about all that.
The East Coast is a lot different, I'm going to let you know, Tremaine, than growing up in Stockton or going to school in Montana. It's a little bit different here now. You know that, right?
Yeah, man. I got a lot to learn, but I'm looking forward to it.
What is going to be the biggest adjustment in your mind about living on the East Coast?
The biggest adjustment, to be honest, probably just the time difference. You know, I would say the weather, but I played in every weather. You know, I went to Montana, so I've seen every weather. You know, I've seen all four seasons. And I know it gets cold in New York, but I'm ready for it.
Tremaine, there may be other players like yourself, like Kirk Cousins, who are willing to play out their franchise tags. What advice would you give to them in future seasons?
Oh, of course, man. If confidence has to be there. And, man, it's okay to bet on yourself sometimes when you got confidence like that. And that's what I did, man. I that's what Kirk Cousins did now. You know, and that's why he's paid, you know, fully guaranteed money. You know, I'm paid, you know, one of the richest contracts in Jets history, and it's a blessing.
You talk about that rich contract. How will that change your life?
Man, it will change my life drastically. Man, just the ability to be a blessing to others, you know, my family and myself. This is life-changing money, you know, and I can invest in this and that and basically take care of myself the rest of my life and my family, you know, my grandkids.
Where are you investing the money, Tremaine? Got any tips?
Not right now, man, not right now. I'm just, you know, these last 2 days has been crazy for me, you know, not sleeping much, you know, talking to my agent every day, but it's all worth it in the end.
It's obviously a significant moment in your life, something that you will never forget. What is the one moment that you will always remember about this process? And maybe it's when your agent calls you and gives you the numbers for the first time, or maybe it's when a family member reaches out to you and is crying. What's the one thing that you will always remember about this experience of landing that huge 5-year contract, Tremaine?
You always, you know, you wish and you dream about this, you know, when you're a little kid. And as I was a little kid, man, I remember telling my mom that, you know, just wait on me for 10 more years, you know, 12 more years. I'm going to make it, you know, I'm going to make it work. And just to be able to follow through and, you know, put God first and have it come through with Joe and, you know, his great team behind him. It's just a truly a blessing.
And what was that conversation like between you and your mother the first time you had it after the deal?
You know, I told my mom when I make it big, I want her to retire so she don't have to work no more. And, you know, I really mean that. You know, my mom, she never asks for nothing. You know, she's the sweetest person in the world, a beautiful mind, beautiful inside and out. And, you know, just to tell her she can't work no more is, you know, it's a special moment in my heart.
What was she doing, Tremaine, and is she going to listen to you?
Hopefully she listens to me, man. I told her the last 2 years to retire, you know, when I was on the franchise tag. But, you know, she's one of those mothers that don't ask for nothing and just shows pure love, you know, for her family, her son. But hopefully she listens this time, and I feel like I got enough money to take care of her.
What is her job? What is her occupation, Tremaine?
So my mother, she's been braiding hair. She's a hairstylist. She's been braiding hair all her life. And she owns a braiding shop called Braiding with Style in Stockton, California right now. So, hopefully, you know, I've talked to her a couple times already. I told her to start looking for a house. You know, that's my what I'm going to do first when I get this money. Look for a house. Hopefully she retires and then just make that, you know, braiding just a hobby because I know she loves to do it.
I don't know. We have some breaking news, Tremaine, that's actually just in. Braiding with Style is now up for sale. It is scrolling across the bottom line of ESPN. Braiding for Style in Stockton, California, now for sale. Mrs. Johnson, she's going to retire and take on a new job. It just broke right here.
I love it. Hopefully, man, we can make that work. But, you know, like I said, I'm going to talk to her daily and, you know, try to get her out of Stockton, man, and, you know, come live this way.
Well, I hope she knows what she's in for on the East Coast there. It's a little bit different than Stockton, Tremaine.
Oh, I'm just talking about just getting out of Stockton, period. man, she can stay in California where the sunny weather is.
Hey, Tremaine, congratulations on the deal. Thank you for taking the time, and lots of luck with the New York Jets.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And so a very special thank you to the Jets' new cornerback, Tremaine Johnson, for taking some time once he arrived in New York to join this podcast. And a special thanks to Field Yates for his perspective on some of the moves that were made in the first week of free agency. Again, a reminder to all you listeners, please call in and leave your voicemails at 860-506-5779, 860-506-5779, to see if we get to your question on next week's podcast when we'll be in Orlando, Florida at the NFL owners meetings, sitting down with some of the highest profile general managers and head coaches in the game. Come join us next week on the Adam Schefter podcast. Thanks for listening today, everybody.